Hi, Blogging Heads viewers. It's Daniel Strauss and Betsy Woodruff on the Thanksgiving edition of Woodruff and Strauss today. I am wearing my coat because our office is freezing, and I've been hearing similar anecdotes from all kinds of people around D.C. Betsy was just saying the same thing. And we are here today to talk about,
issues of imports.
Issues of import.
Things that actually matter. It's crazy.
Not so much the horse race stuff. Fuck this. You know what? I'm taking this off. Okay.
Are we allowed to say that?
We've cursed. There's been cursing. You know, bring it. Bring it. All right, guys.
We'll find out.
We will find out. All right. This is a rated R edition of our episode. So, Betsy, coverage lately has been dominated by one thing, which is the aftermath and the responses of the Paris attacks, and that has included, which we didn't mention in planning this episode, a vibrant discussion on Syrian refugees, I just realized, as well as terrorism as a whole, and the field has shifted in that direction. So it's a little more serious than our usual, like, what does ex-staffers comments
somebody
mean?
Said something is kind of dorky.
Oh, it's so important. You know, this is actually important.
Yeah. This is important.
This is important. So, it's not a laughing matter. Stop smiling.
Indeed.
It's also right before Thanksgiving, and like, I don't know about you, but I'm like ready to get on that, to get to the airport, wait 4 hours for my delayed 8-hour flight, and then fly home to my parents. We are going to talk about Thanksgiving, though.
That's a teaser for our important Thanksgiving discussion. I have a controversial opinion on Thanksgiving that, I look forward to hearing your views on.
Right.
But before we get to the food chat, perhaps a quick conversation about terrorism coverage. So here's one thing. This is my first time covering a full presidential cycle as a reporter. So I kind of feel like putting the airplane together mid-flight to in some ways. And one thing that struck me, I guess maybe like when I first moved to DC in 2013, was anytime I was covering Capitol Hill, sort of hearing and understanding that to an extent, there was a fairly small window of time when members could actually pass substantive but also controversial legislation or any sort of comprehensive overhaul of anything. And the reason for that I was always told, was because once it gets too close to the elections, you can't do anything. Don't even worry about it. It's DOA. That was always something that I was sort of aware of as an issue, but hadn't really seen play out in practice until, of course, the lead up to 2014 midterms, when criminal justice reform basically got aborted because it got too close and the clock ran out and they couldn't do anything comprehensive. They couldn't do any overhaul of the criminal justice system because the midterms were so soon. And I remember thinking, that's a little perplexing. If something is good policy, you know, theoretically it would be good politics, and everyone agrees that this reform legislation, everyone with a few exceptions and people who want little tweaks, people largely agree, including very conservative folks and very progressive folks, that the basic spread of policy changes that were being pushed for in 2014 were smart.
Yeah.
But the legislation didn't happen. And now we're kind of bumbling through another try at criminal justice reform as members of Congress try to get that done before an election year. And I guess I hadn't noticed, or it's something that you don't understand, I guess, until you see it play out. I feel very much like a babe in the woods, you know, junior reporter here. But it's something you don't really understand until you see it play out. And I guess sort of it's interesting simultaneously covering a presidential election and doing a little bit of Capitol Hill and policy coverage, because you start to see,
how it all connects.
Okay, now I get it. and it's amazing how these issue events that typically you would not expect to have any policy import, all of a sudden it's like a thing happened, everything.
Right.
Every policy issues are, you know, no, for lack of a better term, people are lawmaking in a way that is reactionary, right?
It definitely, like, the cynicism that, like, X bill is really just to get Y candidate ahead, is like the argument for that is a lot stronger during the presidential season.
Right. Like every Rand Paul press release.
Yeah, and Rand Paul did like introduce legislation to
keep refugees from committing terror attacks in the USA
by making it harder for them to obtain visas for 30 countries where there is a high sentiment of terrorism or high history of terrorism.
Right. The kind of countries people would want to leave.
Right.
Don't want those people for visas. or of course you have Ted Cruz's war on cops hearing that happened, I guess maybe 2 weeks ago. That was in many ways totally perplexing. And as a congressional hearing made very little logical sense. But obviously it's really helpful for him.
But there has been, I mean, you know, to their credit, what reporters always whine about, you guys aren't talking about anything substantive. Yeah. The most interesting and fairly well reported fighting, I think, this cycle on a substantive issue with real implications for the race has been Ted Cruz versus Marco Rubio on immigration reform.
Yeah.
What their stances are on amnesty and who is more conservative. And Rubio has said, you know, there isn't much daylight between him and Cruz. And Cruz has been like, that's not true at all. I think that is, you know,
And it's a significant and interesting policy issue.
Yes.
That's really getting hashed out on kind of a granular level. And that's cool.
How this applies to terrorism, though, because that's been
strange. And circle
and,
of that.
You know, I think it's fair to say, blogging heads viewers, that Betsy and I are a little trepidatious because as much as I think when we were driving to like Lynchburg, we were talking about like of the beats, national security would be a good, or maybe I said that. Like I've always been interested in that beat if I covered something else.
Yeah,
and I've been always envious of our goofy friend Tim Mack, who's very good at that.
Yeah, he is. I feel like I have more respect for national security reporters than any other kind of reporter, because when good national security reporters are just phenomenally important,
right?
And bad national security reporters can do enormous damage, and it's really hard to do.
Yeah,
it's very hard to do it well. It's very challenging to get sourced up. You know, because a lot of these stories, nobody's pushing, or at least nobody who's getting paid lots of money is pushing them.
Right.
So I have a lot of respect for people on that beat.
So let me ask you something. In the context of Paris, I feel like a lot of the coverage of the policy implications have been on the Syrian refugees. Do you think there have been broader sort of discussions that we haven't really talked about? I mean, it's just weird that instead of a discussion, there needs to be more spending on the CIA, or there needs to be like an overhaul of intelligence gathering coordination with the GSGE, I think they're called, the French Central Intelligence Department. We have just seen a very, very fervent discussion between essentially really the White House and the majority of governors. And I say majority
and,
of governors.
And I mean, depending on what polls you look at, the majority of Americans.
Right. And the majority of Americans, because most Americans are like, I don't really want to keep.
Like, maybe not.
That's true. And I say majority of governors because there have been a few governors who are Democrats who've been saying, oh, I think we should keep them out. Most
including
notably,
Maggie Hassan.
Yes. And a Republican operative I was talking to said, like, I didn't see that one coming at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, because she's running for Senate against Kelly AI, who versus tough on
hard,
defense.
Yeah, and very hard to beat, and is a treasure within the Republican Party. Is viewed very highly, is always fighting back some kind of presidential speculation, either as a VP pick or something. Her endorsement is always, like, really valuable.
Right.
So what do you think? Do you think, I mean, why...
Why did it become a refugee question rather than anything else?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think the refugee debate is a pretty logical outflow of the immigration debate, which is sort of then the single biggest policy issue of this cycle, and especially of the Republican primary thus far. And, I mean, refugees moving from one country to another country is itself a form of migration. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that the sentiments that Americans have about immigration, undocumented immigration, the relationship between immigration and national security, that those sentiments you could transpose those pretty, you know, without much change to their sentiments about refugees and refugee resettlement.
Right.
And I think that's why the refugee issue has become so politically contentious, even though, yeah, you're right, like, there are a million policy issues that could have come to the forefront,
right,
in the wake of the Paris attacks, but it was refugees. And I think part of that, too, is sort of this very interesting Donald Trump paleoconservative approach to foreign policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to know what Donald Trump's going to say, basically figure out what Pat Buchanan would say. And it's really, really similar.
It's funny, though. Daniel Larrison, who's my favorite paleoconservative aligned blogger on this, and he writes about foreign policy endlessly, I don't think he's got any love for Donald Trump.
No, I think definitely not. But in terms of, like, actual policy issues, I'd be interested to see what the differences are.
Yeah.
The argument, the criticism of Trump, I think, is his rhetoric and the fact that he's just saying stuff that he has no idea what he's talking about. But Jeff Sessions' approach to immigration is essentially the paleoconservative approach. Trump, obviously, Sessions just about wrote Trump's immigration platform. I think it's safe to assume that, that Team Sessions has the same level of sway when it comes to his refugee platform.
Yeah.
And even though, yeah, like, quote unquote, serious adults, paleoconservatives have a plethora of reasons to not like Trump, I don't know that they can necessarily cite his particular views on immigration and refugees.
I wonder if Sessions is thinking about this. His endorsement probably doesn't carry any more weight than it will right now in this election cycle. Right. He's rolled with Cruz a lot.
Mm-hmm. They've worked together on a lot of
things.
Yeah,
I don't think he's endorsed yet. I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
He definitely hasn't.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of respect within the Republican Party immigration hardliners for Jeff Sessions.
Right. And what's interesting, too, about Jeff Sessions' immigration position is that it's probably the most, just speaking proportionally, probably the most underrepresented immigration view in Congress. Because the number of people who share Trump and Sessions' views on immigration, which is that immigration drives down wages, that the border is not secure and we need a dramatic increase of border security, and also that we need to be deporting way more people than we're deporting right now. And on top of that, we need to be detaining way more people than we're detaining right now. Those views, I mean, Sessions might be the only guy in the Senate,
right,
who makes the case for those things. And I'm not even sure Sessions would go as far as Trump on mass deportation either. I just don't remember. But he might.
Yeah.
It certainly isn't something that he would find anathema, right? Mm-hmm. He might be the only guy in the Senate making that case.
Right.
You know, Trump is, Cruz is going to agree with him to an extent, but Cruz historically has said he's pro-immigration, you know, unapologetically, America's a country of immigrants. And it's only very, very recent that Cruz has gotten on board with the hypothesis that increased immigration drives down wages. Like, that's new. That's a change.
Right.
But that view, even though it only has a teensy tiny representation on Capitol Hill, as we're seeing based on the support for Trump, has a massive amount of popular support. And those views proportionately are underrepresented. And I think that's part of the reason a lot of DC folks, whether it's like political operatives or reporters or think tankers or what have you, are so surprised.
Yeah.
Because those voices, regardless of how you feel about those voices, just aren't heard.
Getting a lot of weight. I don't think you're going to... I mean, the closest I've seen, Jeb actually has been the one who's given, I think, the most moderate view on the Syrian refugees. Most of the field, the rest of the field, and the most notable candidates have been sort of in lockstep here on this.
Definitely.
Yeah. So,
I mean, Cruz has said that Syrian refugees are all basically secret suicide bombers, and that our country's not going to be safe if we let the Syrian refugees in. And it was not Cruz, but Rand Paul. And what's interesting for Rand Paul with the Syrian refugee thing is that it actually gives him a chance to sort of throw some red meat on national security issues.
Right.
Because he's not going to appeal to the NatSec base, you know, the base of folks who are worried about terrorism by saying we need to invade all of the Middle East, because he's staked out pretty clearly he doesn't believe in that. So the way he can appeal to them is by saying, I'm going to keep America safe. I'm going to keep America just as safe as any of these other guys. And the reason I'm going to keep it safe is hell no to all the dangerous refugees, because refugees are scary. And so if I keep them out, we'll be safe.
That goes against, isn't that against sort of the libertarian view, I think that, which is the open border thing?
And that's like a distinction between paleoconservatives and libertarians. And it's also a place where Rand Paul would sort of depart from your hard libertarian or lefty libertarian stance. Another interesting thing is sort of left libertarians versus right libertarians.
Because some folks, libertarians, I think.
Libertarians versus conservatarians, yeah. And it's interesting like what issues they tend to differ on.
Yeah. We've sort of chased that last week on sort of like the tensions between with Rand and libertarians on this issue, because national security has always been one an area that he has had to be very careful on and walk perilously on, and national events in the party has not gone the way that would be easiest for Paul.
Right,
I think that's safe to say.
Evinced by his poll
numbers. As a poll reporter at Politico, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you personally, because I have a friend who is a little nervous about going to the Ohio State-Michigan game. And I don't know if Blogging Heads viewers have noticed or people around me have noticed, but I'm a Michigan fan, because I, you know, only mention it every time I open my mouth. Have you personally, or have you talked to friends who are a little more freaked out? Because I've definitely heard friends and anecdotes and people say, you know, I'm a little worried or something. And I personally have said, go out. You know, there are risks taken. It's not partisan to say, like, the best way to fight the terrorists is to just not be afraid.
Right. And also, like, being anti-terrorist is not partisan.
No.
I think it's okay for us to have the opinion terrorists are bad. I think we're allowed to say that.
Yeah, I think nonpartisan reports can say we don't really support terrorists.
I know. The liberal media. Why can't you be objective? Just report the facts.
I think my editors will be okay with that.
Concern I heard expressed by a person yesterday was about the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade.
Yeah.
I heard somebody say, I would not want to go to the Macy's parade this year. I mean, and it's kind of funny talking about this stuff, right? Because I feel like we're going to be able in 6 months. I mean, I think it is, I feel the likelihood of some sort of violent ISIS-informed attack in the United States, according to pretty much everyone, seems fairly high. It seems a little weird that it hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's not that hard, as we've seen, for evil and or crazy or, you know, mentally unstable people to get guns and shoot a lot of people. That it's not like that is not a particularly challenging
feat. You ever see the movie The Recruit? It is about CIA agents and sort of training CIA agents, and they have a saying in there, which is Robert De Niro, I think. he plays the wizened I want to get this right. He plays the wizened sort of it's Al Pacino plays the wizened CIA sort of field operative, and he says at the beginning, our successes are known, our failures are not.
I think let's
probably assume that at least once or twice American counterterrorism forces have thwarted some kind of terrorist attack recently.
I would assume so. Seems like a pretty safe bet.
Don't know about it.
Yep. Like a safe bet. And I mean, I guess going back to your point about the terrorists winning, like if you're going to try to live your life to reduce the likelihood of terrorists killing you, you can't live in D.C.
Probably not.
Because I mean, like you just got to move.
Yeah, my friend said, you know, listen, they're not going after like Des Moines, Iowa. They're going after New York and DC and those places. That's what that's going for the gold.
Which you know, right. Yes, that's what we expect. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you as far as not going to football games and you know, means the terrorists win. Like, I agree with that. I mean, part of the point of terrorism is to incite terror,
right,
and to make people scared. And yeah, like, if you're, you know, if you're not, which is why, like, right after 9/11, George W. Bush said, go shopping and go to work and keep
partially
living
your life. Because otherwise there was a danger, I think, that the stock market would, like, crash and
yeah,
there would
which
be cataclysm.
Would have been a huge coup for terrorists.
Right.
It would have been a coup for them. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I live in D.C. and I take the metro to work every day. So if there's a terrorist attack, I'm probably hosed. But I'm not going to move, you know, I'm not going to, like, the Washington Post had a really kind of interesting piece today of called your, I think the headline was something to the effect of, you're more likely to be killed by falling furniture than you are by terrorists, because the actual likelihood that a terrorist will kill one of us is extraordinarily low. Right. And the interesting point that this piece made was that sometimes things people do to protect themselves from terrorists actually open them up to bigger risks.
Really?
They had this one data guy, a scientist person, I forget what his initial title was, go through and look at the number of people who, after 9/11, were afraid of flying in planes, which is a totally understandable fear. And so a lot of people started driving long distances instead of flying in planes. But the reality is that even given 9/11 attacks, you are way safer getting somewhere by plane than by car. And what this guy ascertained was that given the uptick in people taking long and dangerous car rides, more people probably died in car accidents because they were afraid of getting in planes than died on September 11th.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this kind of paranoia can itself be lethal,
right.
Because we tend to operate with imperfect information, obviously. And when CNN is just showing images of ISIS terrorists, and
it freaks people out
totally, and you start thinking that's what you need to be worried about. But if CNN all day was showing pictures of, like, mangled corpses being pulled out of burning cars that got hit by the side of the road, that's what we'd be freaking out about, you know. CNN was showing pictures of, I don't know, people who got stabbed in their homes by meth addicts. That's what we'd be freaking out about.
CNN should be looking for a plane. That's what CNN needs to be doing to keep America
totally.
Calm.
Totally.
I have friends at CNN.
So, I mean, I don't think you make your life better by...
I completely agree on this one, Bets. Yeah. I want to segue here, and I want to try a segue on this one. Because I think at most Thanksgiving tables, we'll be talking about terrorism this year. Gee, Betsy, do you have any opinions on Thanksgiving?
That's a good segue.
That's my segue move. That's like, I guess it's like.
My Thanksgiving opinion. This is so, you know, sometimes as reporters, I'm sure you've had this experience. You write something and a year later you look back and you just go, oh my goodness, I can't believe I wrote that.
Oh yeah.
That was really
bad.
I hope nobody digs that piece up and tweets it out and makes me sound foolish.
I did want to tell you, I was trying to show someone last night our little segment on why you shouldn't date a journalist. And the audio for that does not work anymore.
No.
So yes.
I'm gonna fix that.
Yes, I hope Aria, I hope the managing editor, Aria, who listens to these things, you should fix that, because that's actually one of the proudest clips we've
fix
got.
It. Or we can have a discussion again.
Or we can have a discussion. The gist was, don't do it.
Don't do it.
But it's anyway, so.
I actually have an update to that, too. I have a new anecdote that I can use in that conversation.
Let's add this to
the
end.
We'll save it for a later time. But anyway. My opinions on Thanksgiving. Well, first, as like a short little preface, my family does not have political debates at the Thanksgiving table. It just doesn't happen. Like, we have a lot of different opinions on things, but I can guarantee you nobody at my Thanksgiving table is going to be like, so what do you think about Marco Rubio? So what do you think about the Keystone XL pipeline?
You don't get
like,
those
it's just
questions. What I get is like, what's
those?
John Boehner? Yeah, I get like, they think I'm like fucking Woodward. They're like, why haven't you gotten a sit down with John Boehner yet? Or like, so when are you going to write that big piece on, you know, like, Marco Rubio's campaign team and what they're like personally. When are you going to spend 4 days on the trail with them? And I'm like, I really don't know. This is, it's really horrible. I actually hate it. Yeah, it's humbling. So you don't get those.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Well, you're lucky. It could be so much worse.
You should come have Thanksgiving at my house.
I would love to have Thanksgiving at your house.
Seriously, send the invitation.
I would.
I live in Dallas, D.C. You can come have Thanksgiving. Assuming the terrorists don't kill us all by then.
We're going to be okay. We'll be okay, so. America.
I think we're going to be okay. However, my one piece I wrote a year ago that, without any doubt, has stood the test of time, the piece that perhaps the truth of this piece has even been amplified by the test of time, and as I have aged and grown more wise, I just more fully recognize the foresight that I had at the tender age of 25 regarding this. And this piece is a piece that I wrote for Slate when I was at Slate. And the title is, I believe the title is, Thanksgiving is the worst holiday for food.
Great.
Because it is. Because
you know what, Betsy? Wait, so do you regret this or not? Because I actually think I might agree with you on the turkey. Okay, good for you. Because I don't really like turkey. I don't know why we have to eat it.
There's nothing wrong with turkey. It's not bad. But literally any other meat is just as good or better.
Yeah.
Literally anything else. The only nice thing about turkey is that it's a nice visual. So it's a nice centerpiece. But you might as well just get like a cool flower display or something, because it doesn't actually taste that good. It's kind of dry. It's not particularly well flavored. The texture.
Are turkeys nice animals? Do we know that? Because like... otters are not very nice animals, so I'm very pro eating if we can figure out a way. Yeah, otters are
really... otters are bad.
Yeah,
otters are bad.
Mean animals.
Google it.
Seriously, yeah. That's what I say to my friends on it.
About Thanksgiving food. That the irony of Thanksgiving is that it's the only holiday where it consists entirely of eating a meal. It's the only holiday that is singularly focused on food. However, despite that singular focus, its food is worse than any other holiday's food. And I really like Thanksgiving. I think Thanksgiving might be my favorite holiday, but I like it because it's low stress and you lay around and eat snacks and you watch football and then you take a nap after dinner and nobody's freaking out about decorating and you're not like, oh crap, I have to go spend a bunch of money buying presents for my relatives I don't know very well. Like, I think it's great. I love Thanksgiving.
How do you feel about the placement of Thanksgiving? You have to understand, Betsy, it sounds like you live in a warm, loving, functional household where no one argues and that stuff. I don't live in such a household where there aren't any arguments on Thanksgiving, actually. I instigated an argument when I was very young on Thanksgiving over a poker game, which I freaked out about, and no more poker games since then. Yeah, so the truth is, Betsy, how do you feel about the placement? Because I feel like Thanksgiving is placed well in that there's enough time to feel bad about what was said on Thanksgiving and then to feel, and that guilt bubbles up just in time to buy presents for Christmas.
That's an interesting theory. I get that theory. I like that Thanksgiving happens in a cold month.
Mm-hmm.
I find that like sitting around and eating heavy, not very tasty food for an hour is not something that you'd want to do when it's hot outside or warm or balmy.
Yeah.
It's a really good cold weather activity. The color scheme of Thanksgiving, it was really bright oranges and yellows and reds, is very nice and cheery and heartening when it's cold and gray outside. I really like the aesthetics of Thanksgiving. I love pumpkin
pie.
But
the food. Okay, so what would fix this?
So let's get
to
the food. Okay, so Thanksgiving foods. We're just going to knock them out. First, turkey. Not that good. Ham is way better. I'm always leaning on my parents for them to make ham. And my mom's like, oh, we really want turkey. It's so nice. Like, whatever. The only thing I want less than to have turkey for Thanksgiving is to be responsible for making the central Thanksgiving protein. So turkey it is. Next Thanksgiving food, mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are delicious. They are fantastic. I have nothing bad to say about mashed potatoes. However, they aren't really a Thanksgiving food because if you're a normal person, you also eat them on Christmas or whatever other holiday you celebrate later in the year. And you can even eat them year round. They're really not a Thanksgiving food. So mashed potatoes don't count. Third, cranberry sauce. Canned cranberry sauce is hilarious. One point that I made on my piece is that the fact that we celebrate our best food holiday by eating food that was like basically designed for preppers and for people who could barely survive the Great Depression, gelatinous goop that you actually slice up in the shape literally of a tin can mold, the fact that that is what people are eating for a holiday designed to celebrate food is hysterical. And it's not very good. Of course, people on Twitter say blah, 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 homemade cranberry sauce. I've had homemade cranberry sauce. It's fine. It's not bad. It's not great. People, you only like it.
Did you get a lot of shit on Twitter for this piece?
Oh, yeah, overwhelmingly negative.
Awesome.
People were very upset.
You got to own it, though. You got to be like, that's right. I hate Thanksgiving. Let's turn this frown upside down, Betsy. What would you like? I love pasta. I try and make pasta. I've been struggling with various tomato sauce recipes. What would make Thanksgiving better?
I think my ideal Thanksgiving meal would be ham. And then you need like fresh green beans. My little sister actually makes awesome fresh green beans, but they're not really a traditional Thanksgiving food. You can also have them for Easter or year round. And the actual traditional Thanksgiving green bean casserole, which is canned green beans in canned cream of mushroom soup with like Funyuns on top, is disgusting. And if you are a reasonable human being with even a modicum of respect for the temple of the Lord, which is your body, you should not be putting that in yourself because it's disgusting and you deserve better. So I would be having like my little sister's fresh green beans. I would also be having mashed potatoes, which you mash with the skin on, so they have a little bit more texture. Like ideally, russet. Yeah, no, it's good. Because you don't want them to be pureed. You know, like you don't want them to be like nursing home mashed potatoes. So like the skin on be like red potatoes, whatever those are called. Anyway, and then you also have you have ham. You have russet potato. You have those good mashed potatoes. You have good green beans. My mom makes a pretty good sweet potato casserole. That's like slices of sweet potato with brown sugar and walnuts on top. That's good. It's really tasty. So I would add that. And then for dessert, you have pumpkin pie that is made out of pumpkins that my parents grow in the backyard. Okay. And that's what you have.
You have a lovely home experience, Betsy.
It's so good.
I'm going to snowy Chicago, which I miss, and I'm going to go on a whiskey distillery tour. I think these are fair points. I think there needs to be more macaroni in all of this because I think that's a good food for all of this.
Oh, here's another problem with Thanksgiving. Did you know, by the way, that tryptophan is not actually what makes you sleepy after your Thanksgiving meal? Everybody says it's turkey, but it's not. There's only slight levels of tryptophan in turkey.
What makes you
certainly
is
not
it, is it
what the, makes you sleepy is the carbs because people sit down for Thanksgiving dinner and they eat rolls and they eat macaroni and cheese and they eat mashed potatoes and you're just carbo loading. So of course you're depressed. Like, the negligible amount of tryptophan you're getting in turkey is not what makes you tired. It's carbs. That's what does it. So people need to be eating less carbs at Thanksgiving. There's absolutely no point in having rolls. I mean, rolls are fine, but you can have rolls any day, and all they do is make you sleepier. No to rolls.
Okay, so I wanted to close out with two last things. I was wondering if you could pick either one topic, Betsy. Either, like, a brief thing of your little dating update, or... I wanted to tell you that we've talked off camera about Star Wars and you're a little pessimistic on it. Now I'm pessimistic too. So which do you want to like briefly gloss over here? Okay. Cause I'm starting to think you're kind of right. But like,
let's talk about Star Wars.
Okay. Spoilers ahead. My understanding, I love Star Wars.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the Galactic Empire is still sort of existent in sort of alive, and that the rebellion, the Rebel Alliance, is now called the Resistance, and they're just hanging around fighting these. So there are these two sort of warring sort of paramilitary forces fighting each other. That sounds super lame. Okay.
Bad.
And I've seen other things.
It's the purpose of Star Wars.
Like the new sort of successor to Han Solo, who's the charming, handsome scoundrel. Poe Dameron may be like a bad guy, actually. I don't really know. So a lot of things that look good kind of look bad. I don't know. I'm starting to think you're right, Betsy. All right?
I feel bad about it. Can I say another reason that I feel bad about it?
Yes.
Another reason I feel bad about the new Star Wars movie is that from watching the trailers, I don't really know what's happening. And I feel like good movies... sometimes, or at least often, have good trailers, and the trailer kind of gives you like a sample of what the story is going to be, and you get a little bit of a narrative arc, and you get some characters sussed out. But with these new Star Warses, I don't know anything about any of the characters. Like, there's zero character development in these. We don't know who the weird voiceover is from, and I don't know diddly squat about where the plot is going. You know, the one thing I like about the trailers is that the music is great. Music is fantastic. That I find the music is really good. And the look of the movies looks more like the original Star Wars than like the new Star Wars. Because the new Star Wars are like all CGI and just like tiring to look at because of all the weird effects. Somebody's waving in the background.
Hello. I know. Thank you, Hadass.
Oh, hi, Hadass. Oh.
Yeah.
Tiring to look at because of the weird special effects. And, you know, all the effects sort of distract you from what was really great about the movies. I'm hoping that doesn't happen in these ones, although I'm pessimistic.
Okay, I can't think of a movie where this is the case, but I've always operated under the opposite view that movies with bad trailers oftentimes are really good because it's hard to encapsulate like why a movie is good in
a
short
good
trailer.
You can't fit
in
the trailer.
Like, they're just like, I don't know. I actually really didn't like Interstellar, actually, and it sparked my first my first existential crisis, which was a miserable affair for me. Yeah, I was seeing some other movie, and I like there was a thing for. The trailer for Interstellar, and I was like, A, I was like, this movie will solve all my problems. I have to, like, watch it, which I do every year with one movie. And B, I was like, oh shit, nothing matters in my life. Nothing is ever going to matter. We're all doomed. We have to get off this planet, but we can't. So, like, it's all pointless. It was a long, long 3 months.
Can I interrupt you really quickly?
Yeah.
What are other movies you've watched that you thought were going to fix your life? I'm just really curious.
Before Interstellar, it's like one movie every year. It was Zero Dark Thirty, actually, for some reason.
Okay.
Because I just sort of like, I thought sort of the perilous journey, the also almost like religious journey to just chase this one thing, and sort of the obsessiveness was sort of just reminded me a bunch of like goals I've had. And things that have just sort of like, I don't know. And before that, I don't remember. This year, I think it was Interstellar last year. Can't remember what it was this year. Can't remember, but there's one every year. Obviously, they have no serious impact because
your life doesn't get fixed.
Yeah, because my life doesn't get fixed. And they're hyped up so much. You don't have that? That's not a normal thing for you?
No, not really.
Well, good for you. That's a sign.
Maybe I should. So here's my movie thing that I think we've talked about last year is that me and a good friend of mine, well, we did this last year, we're doing it again this year, trying to watch all the Best Picture nominees.
Yes.
So we've actually started out way earlier than we started last year. Because last year we didn't start until after the nominations came out. Yikes. Oh, this is my mom. I will call her back. Last year, we didn't start until after the Best Picture nominations came out. This year, we're sort of trying to game it out beforehand and reading blogs that have gossip about where are going to be the contenders and stuff. So that's been really fun. And you know, we have an Excel spreadsheet with a list of all the movies we need to see and like articles about the movies and when we're going to see them and whether my friend's seen them, whether I've seen them, which is good. But I don't usually get super emotionally invested in movies. Maybe I should. Maybe it'd be a good outlet.
Here's a good example. Flight. I did not think Flight was good. With
Flight?
Yeah, Flight, about the pilot who flipped the plane around and saved everyone on the plane. But it turned out that he was kind of a drunk. And he had all these other problems.
I haven't heard of this movie.
Well, it's out there, all right? With Denzel Washington.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't see it.
Okay. Well, it had a great commercial. Or Lord of War, okay, with Nicolas Cage. Also looked awesome in the trailers. Awful.
Interesting.
But I think you're right. I think these are good points.
Go ahead.
Yeah, please do.
One thing that I kind of have started to like doing is watching movies without seeing trailers, it's something that I did last year when we were watching all the Oscar movies, because some of them I just didn't have time to watch the trailer. It was like, what's the movie about? It's a nominee. We're going to go see it. It's actually fun. It's actually kind of fun going into a movie with like no expectations or when you're not watching for anything in particular. I really like that. That's what I was going to interject.
I really want to remember what I thought my big movie of 2 years ago was.
This is such a good podcast.
What was
2 years?
Yeah.
People are learning.
People
so
are
much.
Like, these guys are weirder
are like,
than I thought.
I'm so happy to hear about
them. All right. Well, I got to go anyway. Betsy, happy holidays. And I have at my desk a little like 350 more days till the election is over. So.
I hear that.